okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 134 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me, once again, on the line from Melbourne, Mr. Shelton Muller. He's back!
I am back. Back from Rockhampton, from another workshop, and back, of course, to record another episode, another thrilling episode of Shutters Inc.
Well, I'm sorry, don't judge it as thrilling until we've finished it, mate.
It's always thrilling, Bruce. Why do you think people keep coming back?
That's right, exactly.
We have to be positive about this, because if we're not, people could really get bummed by the fact that we've missed the last couple of weeks or so. How many weeks has it been?
3 weeks.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Okay, great. Fantastic.
Not that anybody's counting.
I think they are, actually.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah, I was just up in Rockhampton running some more workshops, as I said.
Yeah.
And Mark Chapman there, who's a listener to Shutters Inc. and was on some of the workshops over the weekend. Hello, Mark. I know you're listening. Was saying how disappointing it is to plug in your iPod and go to iTunes and nothing happens. Yeah, very disappointing, he said. But mind you, he's a relative newcomer to Shutters Inc., so he has like 110 episodes that he hasn't heard.
Fantastic.
So I just said, mate, there is some good stuff, you know, in the older episodes. I remember, you know, we talked about the Kodak Retinet 1A and how lovely a camera that is, and the release of Kodak Tri-X film. That was a really good episode. this new autofocus technology that's being developed. So if he goes back to some of the old episodes, I'm sure that, you know, he'll find something rather interesting there.
Yeah.
So what's been happening in your photographic life while we haven't been discussing Bruce
you remember the sunrise panorama I shot at Tabowry Lake?
Yep.
Which I posted earlier on. It was 9 images stuck together. Well, I, after consultation with a couple of our listeners who have used Brilliant Prints up in Brisbane, I decided to give Brilliant Prints a go.
Uh-huh.
And I had them produce a canvas for me of that panorama, which I had made 150 centimetres wide and 30 centimetres high. And it looks absolutely stunning.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm so blown away with it. I've actually got it at work at the moment in my studio at the radio station. And every single person who walks in the room looks at it and goes, wow, that's awesome. And I kind of deliberately lead them on by going, oh, thanks, yeah, it came up well. And of course they immediately then go, oh, wow, did you shoot that?
Yeah.
It's like, yep, I did.
Did you do that? Yeah. Wow, you must have a really good camera.
Yeah, exactly.
To which you answer, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I bought my camera from the same place Shakespeare got his pencils.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, boy. I'd love to see it. Next time I'm up in Sydney,
mate,
I'm going to have to come down and have a look at it.
Yeah, it's come up nicely.
Mm.
And it's interesting. I got into a conversation with one of the guys at work today who's he's an English guy who's I think he's got full-time work with the radio station, but he obviously expects that at some point that's going to come to an end and he's going to go back to England.
Yeah.
And he said to me, he said, you know, he said, I'm currently renting in a unit at Kirribilli.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I look straight out my window at the Opera House and I've got the, you know, the Harbour Bridge to the right. And he said, I would love to have, you know, a great panorama like that. He said, but I just don't know how to do it. And he said, I don't have a great camera and I don't know how to stitch it together and yada, yada, yada. And I said, well, mate, I could come over and shoot it for you. And his eyes lit up and he said, seriously, would you? And I went, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I said, look, you know, the thing that, you know, started sprouting Mullerisms at him. I said, the thing that most people don't understand about photography is that it's all about capturing the light. You know, it's not about how pretty the subject is. It's about the quality of light at the time that the image is taken and the direction of it and blah, 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 you know.
Yep.
And I said, you know, for where you are located and, you know, for what you want to capture in this image, the ideal time of day is going to be first thing in the morning because, right. you know, the Opera House is on the south side of the harbour facing north. The bridge is to your west. So, you know, you need the morning sun so that it shines on the Opera House and on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah, yeah, you're right. He said, I go for a walk in the mornings and it looks beautiful in the mornings, you know. So I said, well, look, you know, we can organize a time, you know, probably a weekend morning where I'll, you know, get up early, 5:30 and drive over to your place and we'll do it, you know. And he,
you madman, you're nuts.
Well, I figure he's going to buy a print, so why not, you know?
Fair enough.
Because he said, he said to me, you know, what I really want is to have a great big print like you've done with this sunrise panorama mm-hmm. that after I leave, I will always be able to look at that and go, that was what the view was like out of my window during that time I was living in Sydney.
Yep.
I thought, well,
worth doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I figure, hey, you know, it will be a, you know, typically iconographic sort of image that could come in quite handy for other things. So,
yeah,
I said, yeah, why not? I'll go and shoot.
Why not? So. Oh, absolutely. And you know, you only get so many sunrises in your life.
That's it.
You know, so why not? You know, why not get as many of them as possible?
Yeah.
You know. So,
but to carry on your question or the answer to what have I been up to photographically?
Yeah.
This morning I'm sitting in my studio, working away on my computer. So I have my back to the door.
Mm-hmm.
I hear the studio door open, and in comes Barry, our chief engineer, who's Scottish guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in. He goes, Bruce, got this, you thought you want to see it. And I hadn't turned around. I knew it was Barry straight away by the accent. And I said, oh, what do you got? And he's going, my new D3X.
Right. Lovely. And
I just turned around and dropped a couple of expletives that ended with off. And
did you tell him to cough from a distance?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
And so he hands over this D3X with a 70-200 f/2.8 lens on it.
Nice.
And oh my God, I mean, this thing weighs a ton, as you probably know. I'm assuming you've felt one, but oh, what an amazing camera.
Yeah.
Like, as you know, I'm not a Nikon user. I've never used a Nikon camera, and yet I was able to pick this thing up, and within a couple of minutes, I had worked my way around it. I'd worked out how to change the shoot mode, how to change the ISO, how to change whether it was shooting RAW or JPEG. Like, it's so intuitive.
I find the Nikon layout very intuitive. When I'm running a workshop, and maybe it's because I'm familiar with them, and it would be interesting to get feedback from our listeners, but maybe that's, you know, because I am familiar with them. But I pick up a Canon, a lot of Canons, most Canons.
Yep.
And I can't for the life of me work them out, you know, in a short period of time.
Right.
And even the Sony, when I reviewed the A900 a little while back, I found it, I picked it up and I didn't know, it took me a little bit of working out. Whereas the Nikon to me was, okay, that's this button and that's that button and it does this and that. And I think the other thing is that Nikon try to keep as much consistency between their layouts as possible, so that if you've bought one Nikon and upgraded to another, you pretty much know, you know, it segues from the other fairly well.
Which is a great philosophy, but that meant nothing to me because I'd never touched a Nikon before.
True.
So I was just impressed that I was able to pick it up and work my way around it pretty darn quickly. And the other thing that just absolutely blows my mind with Nikon is just how, and by the way, no, this is not a paid sponsorship, people. it's just the color and white balance accuracy just flips my wig.
Yeah.
It is phenomenal.
Yep. Yeah. It is beautiful. I must admit, I shot just because I don't get much of a chance to actually take photographs on my workshops. I worked a little harder to get some this time around.
Yeah.
But I just, because I, you know, I don't want to fiddle around. I do work manually in my exposure, but I kept my auto, I kept my white balance for my JPEGs on auto. All most of this weekend, and I was in so many different kinds of lighting circumstances this past weekend.
Yep.
So, but the auto white balance on the D700, which is, you know, the same as the D3, and I presume has been upgraded or updated to some degree on the D3X, is always fabulous. Very rarely does it let me down in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would agree with you. I think, I mean, the other thing, of course, you have to remember is that you're used to a camera that's now, well, a few years old.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was very well aware of that, that, you know, mine is probably, I'm guessing, 5 or 6 year old technology now. And obviously, you know, digital imaging technology has come ahead in leaps and bounds in that time.
Yes.
And as I said to you before we started recording, I think when I do decide to buy a new body, I think that'll be one of the key things I look at is, you know, between wherever the Sony Alphas are up to at that point, and the Nikon system, is looking at that color and white balance accuracy, because I think in pretty much every other respect, I don't think there's a lot of difference between cameras. In, you know, they all do the same thing, they all offer the similar resolution.
The competition between them is very tight.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think it'll come down to those kinds of things, you know, about, you know, having the image right in camera, as you're so often telling us.
Yes.
Because that was the thing that really spun me out. Like, I just fired off a couple of just snaps with the D3X. You know, I wasn't going to take it outside because, seriously, Barry had only, he said to me when he walked in, he said, I only got this half an hour ago. He'd taken one image on it.
I'm surprised he handed it over.
I know, so am I.
Especially a Scotsman.
You know, so I didn't take it outside.
You be careful. You handle my new camera. I'll rip your sporran off.
So I didn't fire off too many shots. You know, I just fired off a couple of snaps. But just the accuracy of the white balance just really spun me out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
yep. Look, I think I was, as I said, just going back, I was working with a whole bunch of photographers, of course, over these last few days in Rockhampton. And one of them Andrew, who also doubled as the groom.
Right.
Andrew Fenning, he has a Sony, I think it was the A900.
Wow.
And it's a lovely piece of gear. And whenever he showed me an image on the back of the camera, it was just stunning.
Right.
His white balance on it was really gorgeous. And the color and everything in the screen was, you know, lovely. A little warm, actually. And I think I'm not sure that he set it to any warm color balance like window light or cloudy or anything like that. It was just a very nice, lovely, warm white balance. But images were always gorgeous on the back of his camera. So I'd say that, you know, considering your Minolta is now a Sony, so to speak, you'd probably find that you'd be able to stay with your system and still get gorgeous images. I know that Sony users are not complaining, you know, about that. So, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that. But cameras, because your camera is now a few years old, you would notice a difference. At the PMA show in Sydney that we were both at a few weeks ago, at the Nikon stand, there was a very, very large print. I'd say it would have been, I'll just speak in inches because I'm used to print sizes being in inches. Let's put it this way. All right, it was a meter. It would have been a meter across.
Right.
And in the format or, you know, in the aspect that it comes out of the camera, pretty much straight out of the camera, I was told. And it was a photograph of a bridge, a landscape photograph taken, I think, on the Isle of Skye. Yes, it was the Isle of Skye.
Okay.
And it was stunning. Just a beautiful landscape. And it reminded me of the days when we'd pull a tranny out of the camera, and that was our image. You know, we'd pull a transparency out. It was our picture, which is, you know, why film-trained photographers are working so well in the digital realm.
Because they learn to get it right.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And the image was stunning, but because it was taken with a D3X, it was sharp as a tack.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The resolution was incredible. In fact, I would say that the resolution was the equivalent of any medium format camera you could have made that print from.
Right.
Just unbelievable. So this is where, you know, 35 millimeter size cameras are going, and it's good news, absolutely wonderful, you know. So when you do get your D3X, mate, you're going to absolutely love it.
Yeah, I don't know that I'll be going quite that high up the tree, but anyway.
Kath will let you get one, won't you, Kath?
Yeah.
He's a good husband. He's a good husband. He works hard. Let him get a D3X if he wants to get a D3X. You know, I'm doing what I can here for you. I'm doing what I can.
Thanks, mate.
Well, I've just posted up on Facebook that Shelton Muller is recording the latest episode of Shutter's Inc. Finally. I've got David Oastler who says, about time. Thanks, David. Mike Holman, say hi from the Kiwi fans. Simone Clark, woohoo! Richard Ingram says, oh my God, now I need to download that and join 5 Minute Photographer. So the to-do list is getting bigger and bigger. Say hi to Bruce. Hi, Bruce. And he says, hi, was Rockhampton? I'm not typing the answer now, Richard. I'm flaming recording Shutter's Inc. I can't tell you how Rockhampton was. Anyway, listen, it was great. Mark Chapman from Rockhampton. Woohoo! A new podcast is on the way. Mike Holman then again. Good. So there you go. I've done all that I've been asked to do up to this point. on, you know. And speaking of Richard Ingram, mm-hmm. we have an email from him, don't we, Bruce?
We do.
Should I read it out?
Go for it.
Firstly, great show. Love it. I've just emailed Richard, and I think he's talking about Richard Annable. Would that be correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I've just emailed Richard via Facebook and said something similar to what follows, but would like to pass it on to yourselves as well. After hearing Richard on the 3-hour podcast the other day, it inspired me more than ever to change my life around, and it can be done. I commend his courage to speak out about his struggles and how he turned his life around. And with support from good friends such as yourselves, he is now an amazing and successful photographer. I've recently taken up the 365 experiment, giving more reason than ever before to pick up the camera every day. From networking with yourselves, Richard, Tony, Landon, Simone, Kelly, and Mikey, to name a few, I have found my passion again. And we'd just like to say thank you, guys, and I'll be joining up with 5-Minute Photographer very soon. On a subject note, could we have more guest speakers? And at this point, Bruce, you can understand that I used to like Richard, but now I'm finding, you know, now he's really starting to annoy
now
me.
Now he's sold you down the river.
Yeah, sold me up river, man. He says, hearing Richard and Nathan gave another perspective to the podcast, even maybe when Shelton's not available, just to keep those weekly podcasts coming. Not that we want to replace the guru / Jedi master. Really do love you, Shelton. Also, still life and landscape photography, would love to hear about. The wedding series was awesome. And then he goes on, a commercial series too would be of interest. Richard, we just finished a whole bunch on commercial. But anyway, I have to put on my awful green shirt and go back to my day job. Thanks, guys. Keep up the fantastic work. Well, what do you think, Bruce? What do you think? Should we do more guest speakers?
Look, I don't see why not.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested to get some feedback.
I was hoping to get some support from you, but obviously, you know, you're the enemy now. Yeah. Fine.
Sorry, mate.
No, it's good. No worries. Yeah, fine. Man knows he's no longer good enough. All right. No, actually, it's a valid point. And I will be away, of course, from the end of October through to the third week of November. So we're going to have to find somebody to replace me in that time. So if you want to replace me in that time, you can apply to Bruce at studio@audiotou.com and send a voice tape of yourself, Barry White, that kind of thing. And let's see if we can get someone to replace me while I'm away.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of people willing to put up their hand for that job.
It'll be very interesting, actually. It'll be very, very interesting. But, of course, we certainly will consider that. But, go on.
My take on that when I read Richard's email was not so much as necessarily other photographers, but maybe, you know, industry people, you know, whether it be, you know, representatives from different camera manufacturers or, you know, marketing people from, say, lens companies or filter companies like Kokin or something like that. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm open to ideas.
I can certainly line up a few. That wouldn't be a worry at all.
Cool.
So we'll start working on that now, Richard. Excellent idea. Excellent idea. And he actually reminds me of the thing that I was going to perhaps discuss tonight, Bruce.
Yeah.
And that is that Richard here has mentioned his, well, how he's been influenced, encouraged, upbuilt by other people.
Sure.
Fellow photographers. And I know that that was the case with Richard Annibal. You know, once he began to associate with photographers, his life turned around. And, you know, he started with me, basically, and then expanded out into, you know, the circles of photographers in which with whom I surround myself. And then he surrounded himself with others. And, you know, it just becomes this big circle of photographers that you start to associate with. And we're a good bunch. But the influence that that had, the life-changing potential that that had, was incredible. And being a mentor is a very, very powerful thing. I think it's good to have mentors. It's good to look up to photographers. But an interesting experience happened to me over the weekend while I was in Rockhampton. And because I'm there running a workshop, because I have a sort of relative renown in the industry, there are some people who look at me as a mentor. I find that a little bit, I don't know, difficult sometimes to cope with, because we all put our pants on one leg at a time.
Yep.
But if I'm able to encourage someone, inspire someone, educate someone, give someone a boost up, a leg up, I'm honored to have that role. I sometimes think of, you know, who I really am and wonder, you know, why I've suddenly reached this. I mean, even what is Richard call me here, the guru, Jedi master. I'm not. I'll tell you the guys who really are. I'm certainly not, but thank you, Richard. You wonder, you know, you have to be very, very careful in that position. And you don't ask for it, just that it's natural for humans to look up to, you know, people who are, I don't know, they're capable, who have the level of renown or whatever. If you are in that position, you have to be very careful the kind of influence you wield. And you need to be very careful how strictly you wield it and how reasonable you are with other perspectives. The same is true of those who look up to photographers and use, you know, them as their inspirations and as their mentors. I was speaking to a group of photographers on Friday night, this Friday just passed, because once again, I was asked to come to Rockhampton, which is in Central Coast Queensland, to run more workshops for the photographers up there. And I'm honored to go there. It really is just an awesome privilege to keep going back to this place and have some photographers return to do other workshops and new photographers pop up. I mean, how many photographers can one town have? This is amazing. I mean, it's just a little country town on the coast of Queensland. It's sort of, you know, not a little country town, but it's no thumping great metropolis, you know.
No.
But there are photographers to the wazoo in this little place. It's awesome. But, you know, in the group, there was a gentleman who, by his own admission, had only photographed a handful of weddings. But he was so influenced by a particular photographer in America who he says is charging $15,000 per wedding. And she's only been photographing weddings for a little while herself and has built such a level of prowess, renown, skill, talent in that short period of time that to him, she is just the bee's knees, and he wants to emulate her, copy her, and, you know, that's fine. I was only concerned, though, that he was so enamored with her work and her style that he found it difficult to step outside of that work or that style.
Right.
And I'm wondering which comes first. Is it, you know, the chicken or the egg? Does Jeff, who is the gentleman I'm speaking of, hello, Jeff, if you're listening, does Jeff have his own style? First of all, it's innate to him, and, you know, he's already started producing images that are of that style, and then found a mentor that he can relate to who shoots similarly. Or was he searching around, found some photographs, was really inspired by them, and then thought, I'm going to emulate that style? Which comes first, you know, the chicken or the egg? And then, how rigid are you going to be in terms of your respect to that mentor and you and how you shoot. Jeff was very forthcoming in telling me that, you know, he had second thoughts about doing the workshop. He's said openly that he's not a real fan of my work. And so that's okay. That's all right. That's not a problem. But he did want to learn some aspects of wedding photography that he was having a problem with, particularly posing and that kind of thing. So he came along to the workshop. However, during the course of the evening on the Friday night while I was speaking, I always do a lecture before my weekend. So on the Friday night, I do a two and a half hour lecture about wedding photography and its the various aspects of it. And then all day Saturday and all day Sunday, we shoot a wedding, essentially, from home of the bride, you know, right through.
Yep.
And he was very forthright and very forthcoming in how he felt about my style, what I was teaching, how I would set up photographs to be metered and lit. And he would meter them and light them very, very different to me, which is fine. But I got the feeling, and he's even sort of said so on his blog, that he has this almost, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong and you're listening, Jeff, but this almost right and wrong way of seeing or shooting an image that is limiting his capacity to step outside of his style. And that is, I think, severely restricting. I would love to be able to step out of my style for a little while, and I want to do some workshops with other photographers so that I can expand on my style. Jeff seemed to have this take whereby, if it was, and I could have got him wrong, but it could be just the fact that he was very passionate about this style that it came across that way, but that he felt it was wrong to do it one way and right to do it another. He's very technically minded. He's a technician in terms of metering and that kind of thing, but it just seems to get in his way. And I'll tell you a situation where that happened that made me feel this way. Mm-hmm. I set up our bride in the late afternoon light. We were down on the rocks down at Emu Park, which is a sort of a rocky beach with a beautiful old jetty that we were using, a stone jetty that we were using for photographs. It was just gorgeous. And the images are on my Facebook site and on my blog if you want to see them. I set up the bride, our model, to be, and I suggested that everybody, you know, meet her for the highlights. I had her rim lit by this gorgeous setting sun, late afternoon light. And I suggested to everybody that they meet her so that she's rim lit. And there was this beautiful light just outlining her profile. I'd got her to turn side onto us and in profile. And so her forehead and her nose and, you know, that little gap in your between your nose and your lips that has that little indent, you know.
Yep.
And chin. And it was beautifully rim lit. And you could see the profile, the outline of the profile, if you metered it, you know, for that. Which meant metering for the highlights, technically, I suppose, underexposing according to what the camera said. So anyway,
so were you having them use some fill flash?
No, absolutely not.
Right.
No. I just wanted them to get that metered rim light effect.
Yep, right.
And a lot of what I teach, especially at a wedding workshop, is metering techniques, because metering is, you know, we'll talk about this later if you like, Bruce, because I think it's very important. Metering is so important, especially in wedding photography.
Oh, and particularly in digital. I mean, we've spoken on many occasions about, you know, the importance of not blowing highlights.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And something like rim lighting is one of those cases that is a, you know, a real trap for young players, because you have a natural tendency as a beginning photographer to think, well, I've got a meter for the face. But if the face is slightly darkened because of the rim lighting effect, then you stand a pretty high likelihood of blowing out all of that rim lit detail.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now, Jeff loves his very flared, high key, almost sort of a David Hamilton, if anybody remembers David Hamilton from the 70s, kind of effect. And it is actually a style of photography that's really starting to take off. Become very popular in commercial work and that kind of thing. So I have no problem with it. He took a photograph and he spot metered on the model's face, which was in the shade, and everything behind blew out and everything else blew out. And he had this very high key, blown out sort of pale photograph.
Yep.
But mine was the exact opposite. Mine was low key with the rim light accentuating her shape, you know, her profile. Both are correct, depending on your perspective.
I guess that all comes back to, as you keep saying, about your vision, your creative vision.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And how influenced your creative vision is. Jeff basically said, no, I don't like that. I don't like what you're doing at all, Shelton. I don't like it at all. It's and it's wrong. You can't see any detail in her face. I've metered so that you can see detail in her face. And I said, yes, but you've blown out everything else. I've metered for no detail in her face, but you can see that beautiful rim lighting and, you know, the gorgeous color in the sky and in the air, in the light around us. And he basically was saying that what I was doing was just not right. And I was saying that they're both right. And I took him aside and I said, look, I love what you're doing. That's fine. You shoot the way you want to shoot. But I'm trying to teach you a way of stepping out of your way of shooting so that you've got more tools in your toolbox.
Yeah.
If you always stick to the way you shoot, are you ever going to, you know, be able to expand on that? Are you ever going to find another vision? What happens if you get a little tired of always shooting the same way and it becomes a little bit by rote for you? You know, after shooting for as long as I have, I must admit that sometimes I feel that way. Yeah. And I would love to, you know, maybe go to a Jerry Gionis or Jur Van Zanzanian or Martin Shembri or Ryan Shembri workshop or whatever, just to get somebody else's perspective on this. But because I run my own workshops and I'm really busy, I very rarely get the chance.
Yeah.
I try to look for as much inspiration from other photographers as possible. And Jeff's work did inspire me. I loved the way he metered and saw. What I didn't think was a good idea was his very, the very small visual space that he thought was correct.
Yeah, right.
There's something about that thinking that worries me because, and I go back to where we started, because he looks up to photographers who shoot this style, one in particular. And this person has had a serious effect on his vision. That's a great thing. It is a fabulous thing. But all I wonder is where do you find the balance on that?
Yeah.
You can be so awe-inspired by a photographer and their style, but where do you find the balance so that you are able to work within that, be inspired by it, but not limited by it? And that was my concern. Years ago, you know, I was very inspired in the early 90s, particularly in shooting landscapes. I was inspired by the work of Galen Rowell, the late, yep, great Galen Rowell, whose work and his understanding of exposure and the dynamics of film and its limitations. He shot Velvia, you know, and loved it, you know.
Love Velvia.
Yeah. So, you know, I read his book, Vision, and it was just Revisions, I think it is. He actually autographed one for me. It's just fantastic. And I found myself shooting landscapes, thinking of his techniques and his style. But I love to look at the work of other photographers. I mean, I could never shoot like Galen Rowell in a million years, I don't think. His work is phenomenal. And, you know, it was a real loss to, you know, humankind as a species and to the photographic world when he was suddenly killed in 2001. But I wouldn't ever want to limit the way I photograph and say, oh, that doesn't look like a Galen Rowell photograph, so it must be wrong. Because Galen shoots one way. I'm sure if I was standing right next to him, I might try to do something like he's doing. And I did go shooting with him, and I did try, but I just can't because I'm Shelton Muller. He's Galen Rowell.
Yeah.
You know, and he's obviously got more experience, and he's better than me, you know. But there's also that personal thing that, you know, every person's vision is unique, which is the great thing about the visual arts or any art. So where, at what point do you say your mentor is, you know, an influence, and at what point do you say that you're living in a box? You know, the box designed for you by somebody else.
I tend to think that with almost any creative endeavor, you as a beginner in that art form, whatever that art form may be, you kind of need to accept that there are multiple ways to achieve great outcomes.
Yes.
You know, there's no one single right and wrong way to engineer audio.
Yeah.
You know, for every time you've said, you know, find the light and put a minute on this podcast, I've probably said just as often on sign language,
mm-hmm.
you know, what I'm explaining now is not the be-all and end-all. It's just a starting point.
Yes.
You know, and I really think that, was it Jeffrey you said his name was?
Jeff.
You know, maybe he's just never been exposed to that idea, but it seems like he really needs to, you know, embrace that idea that there are multiple valid ways of shooting, you know, that there is no one right way and everything else is wrong when it comes to a creative, undertaking like photography. And I think that transcends across just about every other creative type of thing there is. It's like painting, you know, you can't say that Rembrandt was right and Picasso was wrong. I mean, they're different styles, but you can't just say one's right and one's wrong.
No, that's exactly the point. And I'm sure that, Picasso looked at Rembrandt's work and just thought it was amazing, but there's no way he would paint like him.
No.
But, you know, if as a photographer, and of course this is just good business, if as a photographer you are asked to do a certain kind of style or work or emulate a certain photograph for a bride and groom, let's say at a wedding,
yep.
You have to do your best, just as good business, to try and give the client what the client wants. I try to put as many tools into my toolbox, as it were, as possible, and bring out as many of them on a wedding as I can to create diversity in their photographs.
Sure.
The more styles and that you understand, the more you are able to
meet the demands of your clientele.
Meet the demands of your clientele and synchronize them within, or you know, make them congruent with your own vision.
Yep.
So I would love to step out of the way I shoot. And in fact, you know, I went to Jeff's blog and I love some of the works that some of the work that he's done on my workshop. He's positioned himself, he's walked the arc, positioned himself completely differently. And there's a photograph of the model, Natasha, and Andrew, who was the groom, that he has shot so differently to me by deliberately placing himself in the path of the light so that it's all flared out and, you know, he's lost all that contrast. But it's quite gorgeous. My photograph of the same scene is completely different because I walked the arc and got it from a different angle. So it's quite lovely, but it's not necessarily a matter of right and wrong. And I look, to his credit, we all had dinner on the Sunday night afterwards. And to his credit, he recognized that there was, you know, a different way of doing things. And his photographs during the course of the 2 days have shown that, okay, you know, he'll give it a go. It's just that I was very, very worried about, you know, the way he spoke with such passion about his way of doing things as aligned with his mentor's way of shooting, that it perhaps, if got out of hand, would become a limitation.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd love to hear from listeners to Shutters Inc. who their mentors are, what level of influence they've had, and loyally,
yeah,
they would want to emulate that style, whether they are scared to step out of that style to increase their repertoire. You know, it's an interesting thought, and it didn't strike me until this occurred on my workshop.
Yeah, it's interesting. When Barry walked in this morning with his D3X, he had over his shoulder his D2X.
Right.
And
nice. The guy likes his gear, doesn't he? Man, does. That's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. And I said to him, I said, man, what what is the deal? You know, are you doing this commercially? You know, are you making money from this? Or what's the story? You know, where are you going with your photography? Because I've never seen any of Barry's photography.
Right.
And I do know that Barry is a huge fan of Peter Lick.
Oh, beautiful work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
And he said to me, he said, look, you know, ideally I want to be able to master my own style of landscape photography and open a gallery. And he made the comment about, you know, how much he loves Peter Lick's work, but he said, you know, no one else is ever going to reach the kind of level Peter Lick has achieved, you know, in terms of commercial success. He said, if I was to try and emulate that, I'd just be one of a million other copycats who are trying to be like Peter Lick. He said, what I'm trying to do is to, you know, develop a niche style in the way I approach photographing landscapes. And to develop, you know, something that's, you know, my own take on it, that's a little bit abstract, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very interesting, and it's kind of, you know, it sort of came back to me listening to what you were just saying then about how much do you, you know, remain loyal to the mentors you look up to, and how much do you develop your own style. And it's funny that that conversation should have happened this morning, and here you are talking about it now.
Kismet. it was what we were supposed to be talking about.
Obviously.
Yeah. The universe was telling us, sending us signals. But I've never had that happen at a workshop before. You know, normally I turn up for a workshop and, you know, everybody's just, okay, we're ready to learn. And I get questions, and I'll sometimes be, you know, challenged on a couple of things maybe. But Jeff was very passionate, very forthcoming, very courageous in the light of the fact that, you know, his experience compared to mine is ridiculous. Right. Only in terms of, well, he openly admitted he shot literally a handful of weddings, 5 or 6 weddings his entire life.
Yep.
I've shot hundreds.
Yeah.
But he was very, very, very staunch supporter of that style. And I only hope that it doesn't get in the way, you know?
Yeah.
And I've seen from his blog that he's capable of taking the shots that I set up, but I wonder whether he would see them himself and meter them himself. You see, I can do his style. Absolutely no problem.
Right.
His style is, you know, flared and spot metered on the shadows, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's fine. I can do that. Can he do mine?
Yeah.
And he may never want to do mine, but the fact that he can means that he has a greater repertoire. But not only that, a more rounded understanding of metering, walking the arc and positioning the subject into the light, et cetera, et cetera, that you may not use all that much, but simply having the understanding of it massively expands your potential vision, even within your own style.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yep.
So I would love to know what people think about this, and whether they found themselves in that situation ever, and how they've gotten out of it, or whether they have ever gotten out of it. You know? The other interesting thing that happened was there was another photographer who shoots his fair share of Rockhampton weddings. Who during the course, we were about a half an hour into the Saturday morning, so our hands-on aspect of our weekend had only just begun. And we were in a house, a lovely home that we had that we were using to do photographs of the bride, you know, the portraits that you take pre-ceremony. And he came up to me privately as I was working the different groups that I'd established, and he just puts his hand on my shoulder, pulls me aside, and he says, Shelton, you keep talking about metering for this or metering for that. I don't understand that. What does that mean? and I said, yeah, sure, mate, no worries. And I took him aside, and we grabbed a model, and I said, look, you know, just here we are. You can see the light on our face that's coming through this window here. Now, just meter for the light that's right here. And I just touched the model on the cheek and just sort of drew this little circle on her cheek. And I said, meter, put your spot meter on and meter for that. Then set your camera manually to those settings, and recompose. So he did that. And he noticed that immediately the moment he recomposed and put his camera back to normal metering, or even if he didn't, his whole exposure went haywire in his camera, like the little picket fence that in your viewfinder showed him that he was
seriously underexposing.
Yeah. Seriously underexposing. I said, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that, mate. Just take the picture. So he took the photograph. He looked at the image on the back, and he just went, oh, well, that's wow. He says, well, that's it. And he just looked at me, and he smiled, and he says, okay, mate, I can go home now. That's fantastic. That's all I wanted to know. That's the thing I actually wanted to know. How do you do that? How do you create those images in the camera? That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
I can go home now. So, in other words, the rest of the 2 days was a mega bonus, you know, for him. I was hoping he'd just be able to, and within half an hour, he'd learn, you know, a very, very simple technique. Because I explained it to him that really what you expose for in the image sets all the other relative values of the image and its exposure, you know, relative to what you've spot metered for.
Yep.
So if you want to create an image in camera that is different to the image that the naked eye sees, which has this broad dynamic range and gets all the highlights and shadow details, etc., that the camera can't, if you want to do that, spot meter on a highlight, or in what Jeff did, spot meter on a shadow.
Yeah.
And when he looked at this image and he saw this bride's face just illuminating, everything fading off into the darkness behind her, he just loved it, you know.
Yeah.
And that I think is a real, when photographers don't know how to do that, it's a real shame. And that's what I said before, is that photographers who learned with film have such an advantage over newcomers who have only ever shot with digital. Because we had to know this stuff. Yeah. We had to know it to pull the image out of the camera. And the thing is, Tony had the advantage, the fellow I was talking about just then, of seeing the result on the back of the camera, and he could tweak it if he wanted to. We didn't have that opportunity.
No.
With Tranny, you didn't have that. You had to make sure you got it right. And something like spot metering was pretty scary. But after a while, you learned to trust, you know, what you were doing.
Yeah.
And gain the experience necessary. What a wonderful, wonderful training ground film was. And I think of the fellas who preceded us, Bruce.
Yeah.
You know, who had to do guide number calculations and then ambient metering calculations so they could mix flash with ambient and fill or not fill. And all the other stuff that they had to do in a split second that make us look like idiots, you know. So these are the techniques that, you know, perhaps we should start talking about again on this podcast, because they seem to be sadly lost on the majority of photographers these days, the simple techniques that we acquired shooting with film.
Yeah, definitely.
Perhaps we should revisit some of them, and if you want us to, by all means, I reckon we could do that, absolutely.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you for that.
No worries. That's a pleasure.
Now, there's one thing I wanted to mention before we sign off, and I think a lot of people don't read audiotoyou.com as a blog. Most people just, you know, grab the podcasts when they appear in their podcast catching software, and that's the limit of their involvement with my site, and that's fair enough.
Yep.
And so as a consequence, many of you are probably not aware that about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I started a forum on audiotoyou.com. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to make it clear here on the podcast that there is now a forum at audiotoyou.com, would like to invite anyone who wants to come along to sign up and start joining in and creating some discussions. I'm not trying to steal Shelton's eyeballs off 5-Minute Photographer or anything like that. It's just merely another opportunity for Shutters Inc. listeners to communicate with each other and to discuss whatever they want to discuss. The link is audiotoyou.com/forum, but that will be in the show notes, so don't feel like you have to remember it. So I just wanted to get that out there and tell people about it.
So can I join up, Uncle Bruce?
Mate, I hope you will. There's questions there waiting for you to answer.
Rightio. I'll get onto it. Oh, boy.
Excellent.
You count me in. Count me in, mate. I will be there.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. I'll come down and help out. That's my job.
Beautiful. Cool. All right. Well, I think that'll probably do it for a week then.
Fair enough.
Good to have you back.
Nice to be back, mate. I'm sorry about those last few weeks, but we'll try to make this absence happen as seldom as possible.
Now, when are you off to India?
I leave at the end of October, and I'm back on like the 21st or 20th or something like that of November.
Right. So we've got a couple of months yet.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. So we can start maybe lining up a few people to podcast during the time I'm away.
Cool.
And if there's someone particular that you'd like to hear from, a particular brand, or let's see if we can line it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right, mate. Well, good to talk to you again.
You too, mate.
And we'll
you too.
Aim to talk next week.
You bet.
Excellent.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right. In the meantime, don't forget to keep those emails coming in, studio@audiotu.com or shelton@audiotu.com. Mm-hmm. Or sign up on the forum and drop a topic there about topics you'd like us to talk about on the podcast.
For sure.
Excellent. All right, mate. We'll talk with you next week.
Good on you. Thanks.
See ya.
See you soon.
This has been another audiotu.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out
shuttersincpodcast.com.
Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@audiotu.com.